setting the stage for you. 1995, Oshawa, Ontario, Canada. A small little club called The Eclipse attached to a bigger club called The Moon Room. And I see this band featuring a drummer whose drum kit is made up of all these weird things that you'd find at like junkyards and various places, including cymbals made out of sheet metal. I'd never heard or seen anything like it. And then the band I was in would play with them. Then I promoted shows with them and ended up tour managing them in a couple of other different projects. And it's been a long time. So today, Christian Simpson of Glue Leg stops by to talk about his brand new record on Do Did Will, the Story of People podcast. Christian Simpson, welcome to Do Did Will, the Story of People podcast. Buddy, it's been a long time. How you doing?
It sure has, Brent. I'm great, man. How are you? I don't know how long it's been.
It's been a long time because I haven't seen you since I moved to Vancouver, which is like 18 years. I think the last thing we probably personally did together was Billy Clippert, maybe.
Oh, my God. You were on that? I forgot all about that. So that was the Canadian Idol.
It was the Canadian. I think that was the last thing we did because we worked with our fallen friend Bob, you know, unfortunately, and he passed. But we, Bob had the new thing there with Billy Clipper. I think you were there. It was Jerry Finn. It was Tim from the Headstones.
Yeah, we were just, just getting him through a couple of dates and then doing the Canadian Idol performance. So yeah, that was what that was. It was kind of, I guess, at that time I was doing, you know, sort of sessions and I think that was probably the last thing I did before I hung him up.
Wow.
Then of course I picked him up again, but that's Drumsticks, just for those that don't know, 15 years later, and here we are talking about music.
It's been a long time. It's funny because how social media works a lot is, you know, you move. Like the rise of social media, honestly, there was MySpace when I left and then it was Facebook and then obviously Insta and all the rest of it. But this is how we sort of see people. And even though I haven't spoken to you in a long time, we haven't seen each other in a long time, but we spent, you know, a lot of shows together, did a lot of shows for Bob. I did a lot of shows as a promoter you guys were involved in. And but then watching like you and Krista and like just and the kids and it's like you feel like you're there the whole time. It's like we've never
I always wonder who you're working for, you usually say where you are, but not who, what the band is. So I'm always like, who's Brent with this time? Cause now I know it's Imagine Dragons, but, cause I've been following your, exploits, as well. And you're, you know, all over the world just doing it, man. You're killing it.
It's been fun, but I tell you something, and I tell this to anybody that I get a chance to speak to, that was part of that journey for me at the beginning. And I always like to tell them, especially when I get a chance to finally reconnect with people after a while, I'll say this, you're here, my man, you're part of this, because Glue Leg was, you know, and you know, there's agents and managers and blah blah blah, but I cut my teeth on those early Glue Leg, I Mother Earth, you know, like Our Lady Peace show, like all those early shows. And you guys always were great to me. You gave me an opportunity to do shows. And, I think I probably did about 6 to 8 shows as a promoter of Glue Leg. But then you guys were on other things. And then I was tour managing bands that you guys were playing with. And you were always great to me. So I always like to circle it back to where I am now. You guys are with me still.
Right.
You know what I mean? And anyone who knows my history will know that I loved Glue Leg very much. And so it's great. So.
Yeah, we're all standing on someone's shoulders, right? I wasn't going to refer to us as giants.
Well, hey, man, it's like we're all part of the thing.
Yeah, we are all of our, influences and our inspiration and who got us started. And but it's great to see that, you know, you hung in there and you're doing these massive gigs around the world.
It's been a blast, dude. And every time you see me post a picture from a stadium filled with 50,000 people, it started with Glue Leg at the Eclipse in Oshawa with me marveling at your drum set made out of tin. and sheet metal and stuff. And I'm just like, what is going on here? And it was awesome. So,
yeah. What was that called? The moon?
The moon room and the eclipse. There was two sides, High Carrie King, High Carrie and everybody involved there. But yeah, it was the moon room on one side and the eclipse on the other. Yeah. And the moon room was sort of the 19 plus room. The eclipse was more of the all ages room.
Okay. Got it.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it had the big giant headstones, H on the side of the building. And
Right.
There was a go-to stop in Oshawa, but
you know, it was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're not too far away from there now, but you, man, you've been making some noise and, doing some really cool stuff. And you've basically have resurfaced to the world, with this wonderful name. A band that I hold near and dear, and it was very much a part of my early career, and you just put a brand new record out, which is awesome. It's very trippy and very cool and so different than what I was expecting, but I'm in on it. It's such a trip on the headphones, so we'll get into that. But welcome to Dude Did Will. It is the Story of People podcast. So Christian, I gotta kick it off. What do you do, man?
Okay, well, what do I do? Do you mean as a...
what are you doing right now? You're playing drums, you're making records. Keeping you busy?
I left the music business 15 years ago and, never thought I would look back, and I had no real interest in it. There was nothing that I liked enough to kind of pull me back in. It certainly wasn't, playing with, as a support drummer or doing sessions or things like that. I did some of that with Edwin and some other, Moist. I did a small tour with, and, Clippert and some other artists. I did a stint a few years in Saga, that, which was great. Right. And that was more of a, like, you're part of the band, not like you're just sort of supporting the singer. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That just wasn't where I wanted to be musically. And I had no problem at the time walking away. And after that, I had to kind of completely reinvent myself, because, I didn't really have another skill set, really. But I adapted, and I ended up starting my own company. We work in condominiums.
Awesome.
And so that has it's gone well, and that has allowed me to actually be able to do this. It gave me the there was a move, which we talked about just before we aired. I moved out of the city, I have a property now that has a large, it's a pool, actually a pool room, an indoor pool. But that I use as, my drum room. And, as soon as we walked in the house, I remember walking in the room and I snapped my fingers and I could hear the reverb in the room. And I just thought, oh, wow, this room's got great acoustics. And, I've always had a drum set with me, at least one, but I mean, it hadn't been set up for years because I was in a house in Riverdale's, nowhere to set it up. So anyway, this move and gave us the space, and I thought, well, I'll set the kit up and maybe my boys will, I've got young boys and maybe they'll want to play it. And again, I never thought of myself, but I kind of keep looking at it like, oh, I wonder how bad I would be, after that long away from it. And Carlos and I had not spoken for at least a decade or more, and but we reconnected, but just sort of socially. There was no talk of, hey, let's, do a record or put the band back together. But he's always stayed with music. I think it's four solo albums he's done under the Alonzo moniker. And, you know, he's produced and, you know, mixed them all himself. And they're, you know, really fantastic. You know, the arrangements are very lush and elaborate and interesting. And, you know, if I thought, well, if I ever did get back into it, I would want to be doing something like this.
Interesting. You
know? Yeah, it wouldn't have just been, you know, kind of, you know, keeping time and doing, you know,
it's certainly eclectic, man. It's
doing
certainly
some hit covers or something like that. Again, yeah. Nothing wrong with that. That just wasn't that interesting to me. So anyway, he kind of kept chipping away. You know, we go hang out, and you know, after a few drinks, he'd be so, come on, man, let's do something. Let's do something. And I'd be like, no. I'm not. No, forget it, man. I'd be horrible. Once you attain a certain level of proficiency and you lose that, you know, your desire to go back and play is, you know, kind of like, nah, I can't play the way I did. So I'm not going to do it again. Anyway, kept hammering away. And then, you know, he said, listen, can you just, I'm just finishing up mixes on my solo record. I've got one track and I would like you to play 30 seconds of drum zone. I said, well, I don't have any way to record it. He said, you have a phone, right? Yeah. Okay. Go, just set your phone up, play along to this section, which was literally like a 30 second piece. And it was just sort of the first thing. And it was, you know, kind of, you know, the way I, you know, play sort of a linear, kind of obtuse with some, you know, layered cymbals and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, so what do you think? He said, perfect. So he ended up mixing that, putting that on his record. And I realized that, you know, it was exciting. It was fun to actually sit down, and I felt, you know, kind of confident with what I had just, the 30 seconds I had just dropped.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I said, you know, okay, let's do it. And then, you know, once I said that, I mean, I'm, you know, I was in 100%, you know, and, I had no doubt, or what did I do, or why did I, you know, it was just, okay, let's go, let's do it.
And, it's amazing how it comes back. I always find myself peeking around the corner at a Long McQuaid or any kind of drum place that I can sit down and try to get some chops in every now and again. I don't have the space either to do it or get loud, but it's amazing where the inspiration comes from, because you set up and you've got a beautiful lake background. It's like, I would just play for days now. So then, yeah. Then naturally you start recording, and then it's like, well, what else can I do into this thing, and what else can I add to it? So
yeah. And also, you know, it was during COVID, but we had the ability to, you know, I got set up with a recording system at home, and went out and bought a bunch of mics and stands and cables, and just kind of figured it out. And,
yeah,
you know, started to, you know, I could record and then, you know, send files to Carlos, and he would send it back to me, and then I would send it back to him. And then, you know, and that's the way it worked. And, you know, really allowed us the time. And, you know, like, it wasn't just set up a drum set and record a bunch of songs. It was like, oftentimes the drums that I chose, and I have, you know, I put together this sort of arsenal of old drums from, you know, I have from a 30 inch marching drum that I use as a kick drum, with 18 inch hi-hats and a marching snare drum, to, you know, little 6 inch hats and a little piccolo snare and a 16 inch kick, and, you know, all kinds of wacky cymbals and, you know, gongs and stuff. And that often informed what Carlos was going to do. You know, he would hear these different sounds, these different textures, and he would come back with, and then, you know, of course, that would then, if I were going to do some overdubs or, you know, some percussion, it that would then inform what I was going to do. The keyboard bass, you know, he was playing upright bass, he was playing stick, he was playing guitar. His main keyboard was an MS-20, I believe, that he found, like, some guy had it in his attic or something, and that it's kind of the main instrument, I guess, on the record.
There's a lot of songs on here, man. Like, there's, you know, there's 20 different 20 songs. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, which we decided to do a double album,
which is amazing.
Probably too much for most people, like to get through it. It's, you know, it's
I'll
a
see
lot.
If I can play something here first. I'll play some audio for a sec if I can here.
Sure.
And see if it comes out.
This is a weird one.
Yeah,
this would be the most obtuse track on the record. It's
there's
sort
some
of a
great
drumming solo.
There's some great drumming. Listen to that room.
It's big.
Listen to that room. It's incredible, man. You know, you got some really cool, like. Some trippy stuff in here, dude. It's funny how we move along, because I've gotten a touch more trippy in my age. Like you really gotta bring it now for me to be fully engulfed in a record. The only one that's been able to do that lately has been Ian Thornley. he's been great. And as far as like those big records are just always like they come out every year. He's got like 10 songs of just headphone stuff. So it's been awesome. Your buddy Jeremy Taggart was in on this too, right? Yep. What track did he play?
He's on a track called Emerson's Elephant.
Here we go. I think I might have called it when I was.
He's on left side. He's right side.
I figured it was this one.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. So you guys did like a right left. He's playing. Yeah. It was. There's some really great video. What we'll do here, because YouTube is our friend sometimes, but they don't like it when we put up don't get permission. So what I'm going to do is
I'll give you permission right now
for everyone listening and all the rest of it. I'll put all the links in for Instagram purposes. When I release this episode, we're going to do tons of like video clips surrounding this thing, because it's very
cool.
It's such a different ride than I was expecting what you put out. But then it's headphone. But yeah, and it's cool. I like to be surprised, because for me, it's like, oh, there's this, and then it's.
Well, yeah, and just to put a point on that, finer point on that, that was I didn't want to do anything that sounded like the old band. I was not interested in that at all, and you know, that was part of, you know, I was on the same page. It was, you know, we had you know, kind of thought, well, should we even call it that, Glue Leg? You know, we kind of debated that back and forth and decided, you know, well, why not? Yeah. You know, we were integral parts of that band. And again, it does, and I've had many people comment on this, like, you know, the sound is obviously quite different. One, there's no vocals.
No.
And there's very little guitar. But, you know, many have commented that this does also it sounds, there are things that are certainly more than, you know, reminiscent of the old band, which is great. So I think we accomplished what we set out to do. Wanted to do something radically
different. I noticed that. Is it maybe Lobotomy Chic sounded a little bit like the old style?
Yeah, and I think the Aegis, the first track,
has a
bit of that. Yeah, that has, that's interesting. That particular track has... there's a guitar on that one, a guy by the name of Christian Sesniak, who I played in Edinburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Ian Crichton, not Thornley, Crichton, from Saga, just delivered this, like, ridiculously amazing guitar solo. And the Emerson's Elephant actually had Jim Gilmore, from keyboard player from Saga, on it. That was sort of our tribute to Keith Emerson.
Very cool. You know, I like the throwback. I don't know if you know Todd Kearns and Brent Fitz and those guys. They have a band called Toque, and they do all the throwback to the Canadian stuff. That's awesome. They've got a really great band. Actually, yeah, they got a great. They play tons, and they do all the Canadian party stuff. But they're also kind of paying tribute to the lost Canadian stuff that people need to hear.
Nice.
So I got to double check. I think they were gonna. They had designs on some of this stuff. So going from what you're up to now, but let's take me back a little bit. How did you do it? How did you find your style? I'm very interested in your style, because anyone that is not familiar with Christian, he's got this really unique playing style, which is amazing. But he incorporates all these sounds and stuff. The first time I ever saw you play, again back in Oshawa at the Eclipse, maybe or one of the other ones, and mm-hmm. you had a drum kit that was just so eclectic and amazing. And then you had, sheet metal and all these different things set up for cymbals and different sounds, which made it very unique to you, obviously. But were you just okay. bored with cymbals, or were you like, I want to add a whole new thing here to make it my thing?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff I was using at that time. I mean, I'd stolen from, guys that my heroes. And I just to back up a sec, that's my biggest compliment to hear when somebody says, you have a very unique sound. Because, I go on Instagram and I go, and see some of these, drummers on there. And I mean, their technique is just absurd. It's almost like the Olympics now of chops and technique. And, I used to have, really much better, I guess, hands than I do now. So I don't have that facility to really kind of blow like in the old days, or like some of these guys I see now. But the fact that people recognize that, you have your own sound. That to me is more important than anything. I'd rather have, just a really recognizable sound that is, I mean, there's lots of guys doing what I do, but that sound like I do. But yeah, I mean, I was doing it 20 years, 30 years ago almost, and it was quite different back then. I got the sheet metal, which I was using as a ride, which we found at a scrapyard. I got that idea from, I saw Einsturden's New Bauten at the Diamond back in the 80s. And I heard that part of their rider was they'd had somebody take them to a scrapyard before the show, and they just get like car hoods and they're pouring the buckets of gravel on it and stuff. And I was just kind of blown away. And they had this big sheet metal that they were kind of banging on. And, I thought, oh, I'm going to do that. And and then it was just kind of finding just all these, chunk of metal lying around. And then my cymbals, the more kind of broken they were, the better. And I, kind of layer them up and just have a really sharp sound. I was using a gong drum as a floor tom, rototom rings as hi-hats, which I still do. I was doing that back then, but that I stole from Terry Bozzio.
Oh, yeah.
I saw him doing it. So drummers like Bozzio, Bill Bruford, Neil Peart, of course, a lot of the more progressive guys out there, just, kind of, they were my biggest influences. And again, I wanted to kind of carve out my own sound.
What happens when we play outside? We become healthier, both mentally and physically. We become more creative and more focused. We connect with nature, each other, and ourselves. Let's Take This Outside, a new podcast hosted by me, Marianne Iveson, an aspiring outdoor athlete and nature lover. I speak to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about their connection to nature, how it affects their performance and everyday life. Let's Take This Outside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and at letstakethisoutside.ca.
Let me ask you about that time, though, because when I first saw the band, it was, you had the stick, you had you. It was just such a unique sounding, looking creation. And that, at the time, and I really think that in that early 90s time frame, everyone was carving out their way. And it sort of, a lot of things had switched, and the rise of Canadian, obviously CanCon helped. People debate whether CanCon helped or not. But for the radio guys out there that I know, they hated it because they had to just keep playing Canadian music all the time. But for the music fan like me, it really created a Canadian touring base, hence how we met, hence how my career started. So I've been a fan of it.
We had our own star system. I guess we do. I mean, I don't know who they are now.
Well, it's a different thing now.
With a lot of stuff, a lot of the newer stuff.
the big thing now, and I don't mean to sound frustrating about this thing, but the big thing now is that a band at the time that had, like, you guys were on Much Music and you played and all the rest of it, those bands are now going out and selling out everything right away. Whereas it was still the grind. Like, now these kids go and they see them one time. And a lot of them I don't find have a ton of longevity. You've got, in your neck of the woods, you got Glory Sons, you got Arkells and stuff that have really built. Out here, there's Mother. But the MTV, Much Music thing is gone. So a lot of the bands are, you know, it's all social media stuff. So the kids get hammered with it. They all want to go see it. And then it falters off. And I don't know, you know, if we have the big stadium kind of bands anymore that we did with, like, Our Lady Peace and some of the In the Hip and some of those things at that point. I don't know if anyone's been able to do it. I know the Arkells have done it a few times in some of the markets, but it is definitely a different time right now for the bands. And when you were coming through, so you guys started with this eclectic thing, and then, and I won't dive too much into the past, but I do want to get your thoughts on the idea of going down this road where it was, it's not, I'm not going to use the word pop, but there was definitely more of a radio rock vibe to the thing. Was that frustrating for you as a creative person? Because you always had the stuff in there, but it definitely, the band definitely went in a bit of a different direction after, you know, the first albums and stuff. And it was definitely different from this point. And then obviously we're into this 2.0 or 3.0 that we are now, which for me as a music fan, it's great. You watch the three different things happen, but you as a creative person and carving out your uniqueness, were you put into a box during that time, or did you fight to still be unique?
Well, I mean, you can certainly see from Heroic Doses to Clodhopper, I think Heroic Doses was, let's just create something. Like, we had this vision of doing something that was just really unique to ourselves the instruments that we were using and the songwriting craft that we had at the time developing. It was definitely different. It was, certainly it didn't, radio didn't really embrace us, or it was a hard sell, I understand that. I'm surprised that we almost got as much play as we did, as minimal as it was. I'm surprised, we got kind of any. And then Clodhopper was a bit of a step in the direction of, embracing Much Music a little bit more in the radio and just trying to kind of streamline maybe the edges a little bit, create something that's a little more radio friendly, but keeping the because at that time we were, it was about trying to have a career, trying to make it as musicians, right? This album that we just did, that Carlos and I just did, was back to Heroic Doses, but even more, it was, we don't have to do anything for anybody other than ourselves. Yeah. If somebody hears it and they don't like it, well, great. Old fans hear it and they go, well, that's not glue. Like, okay. But it wasn't, well, what's the single going to be? I remember even back in the day, you'd have to kind of write, well, we need a barn burner to open with, and that would then dictate what you're going to write. Where this came from, just a real position of, it was a luxury, because we didn't really have, we have no expectations of this selling or making money. I mean, as long as, some people hear it and they enjoy it and, that's enough. And, we're very proud of it. The end result, I think, we're very, very happy with it. I think people listen to, especially fans of the old band, and, I wouldn't say necessarily an older generation, but my generation, I think there's more that grew up listening to a lot of prog rock, progressive rock.
Yeah.
I think like it, it will like it if they hear it, because it is quite progressive, but it's also new. It doesn't really sound like anything else.
No, it sounds well. And
that's
and
great.
It sounds like a soundtrack, actually.
Well,
to me, it sounds
very
like
cinematic.
It's very cinematic. Sounds like a movie soundtrack. Takes you on a bit of a ride, and there's 20 tracks for you to dive into. That takes you all over the place.
A lot of ideas on this record.
Sure.
Yeah, we had thought, I know Carlos, because he, you know, did the lion's share of obviously the production and the mixing, and there were some a few moments where I know he wanted to tap out and just release a single record, and I kind of kept pushing, come on man, we got to do it's our physical graffiti, let's go, you know.
Yeah, so, just go.
And then, you know, once it's released, you realize like, oh wow, that's a lot to demand of someone to, here you go, here's, you know, because, you know, nowadays people listen to the first 30 seconds of a song and then move on, you know. So
there's two different ways you're forcing the listener to commit. So for me, it's like, okay, there's 20. When I see something that's got 20 songs on it, I go, it's a commitment of the process. So you have to pay, like we, the listener, has to pay tribute to you, the creator. And what we have to do is, if you've put out 20 tracks, it means you have a vision here that it's going to take us 20 songs to appreciate, and not individually. It's 20 songs of like a body of work. So that's what I kind of look at. And I'm a not full prog guy, but I am very, you know, I was a massive I'm Mother Earth fan. I like Rush. I like all that stuff. But it was, I like it when bands take me on a journey. It's okay to have your 4/4, your chorus, your pre-chorus and out, but I really love it when bands, especially headphone wise, take me on a journey. And that's why, like, I look at 20 songs and I go, okay, well, he has prepared us to go on a journey.
Yeah. And it's you know, not, again, we've got to write a, you know, here's two or three singles on a record, and then the rest is just kind of filler, or kind of, I mean, how many albums were there, you know, created like that? Huge, massive selling albums that,
yeah,
you know, had big singles. And then, you know, a lot of the other stuff was just sort of, you know, just, again, filler. We, you know, this is, these are all kind of different sort of snapshots of the last year and a half, I guess, of, and just a spark of an idea that would develop into, you know, what all of these tracks became. And often they were just from just a choice of a cymbal or a keyboard sound, or, you know, so, and then they would just grow and not, you know, and turn into these. Again, we did kind of want to create something that would, that did have a cinematic.
How far were you into it when you said to yourself, like, either A, this is going way different than I thought it was going to be, and so now you rewrap your head around maybe where it's going, or were you kind of committed to four or five ideas and then built it around it? Because it does sound to me like there was like, start with one song maybe, and oh man, I got this idea, and then it just seems to have come together in this, like, how do you get 20 ideas out of this process is incredible to me, because it's a journey here. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to unwrap in your ears.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's clocks in at 87 minutes or something like that. I remember, I think the singer from the Mars Volta said, okay, here's our new record, please give me an hour of your life to listen to the record. And we're asking for 87 minutes and change. Yeah. So, you know, we're getting a ton of feedback, and I would say a lot of it has been very, very inspiring, and, you know, certainly made it seem all worthwhile, even though, again, I would say selfishly that we did this record for ourselves, but at the same time, you want people to like it, obviously.
Aren't those the records that always blow up, though? They're the ones that's like, well, that we didn't, just, you know, a lot of stuff came out of the COVID thing where people are like, you know, I don't know if... I'm just going to put this out. And then it becomes the biggest thing. Taylor Swift does it, wins a Grammy, you know, people's opinions about whatever it is, but she's sitting in a cabin with the guys from The National. And next thing you know, it's this like eclectic album. It's like, sometimes you're just like, well, I'm looking at a lake and I made a record, and now it's, you know, sonically the best thing we've ever done. It's getting this crazy feedback. That leads me to obviously with just the two of you at this point, creating this thing. Where do you want this to go? You personally, is this like, as you said, the physical graffiti, leave it on the table and that's your work. But my next question to the end of this thing is, what will you do next with this?
Well, we do have a coda to this that we've already, half of it's in the can. It is just going to be an EP. And it was stuff that we wanted to get on this record, but we just didn't finish it. And one of them was a track, a Frank Zappa cover, his song Peaches and Regalia. Incredible track. And we've almost got it, but it would have taken quite a bit more time to really finish it. And we just thought, you know what, we've got enough on here. Let's put it on an EP.
Great.
So we've got that one. We also have a piece that Jim Gilmore from Saga gave to us, something that he had, and it's actually called Bar Talk, and it's this it sounds like Bar Talk, the composer, but we've put our own Bar Talk, a bit of Aaron Copland, Steve Reich in there, and so that's going to be on it as well. It's just a short piece, but it's really beautiful. We're going to write a couple of other pieces for it, and then it'll be done. So it's almost ready. That you know, be a few months anyway, I think, before we end up releasing that. So that's coming, and there is talk of doing a show or shows. I don't know about touring this thing. For one thing, it wouldn't be just the two of us pulling this off.
You know, how are you gonna do it live? Because yeah. It looks, you know, there's two things to that. How are you gonna do it live? But also, it is so trippy, and it lends itself to a very hell of a live experience.
I think if we can pull this off
sonically,
if we do a show, we will pull it off, or we won't be doing the show. It'll have to be great, or it won't. We won't do it. Mm-hmm. And you know, we've already got Jeremy said he would come out and play.
Yep.
Becky, who sang on the record, I'll probably have to twist her arm a little bit, but I think I could get her to do it. Gord Fiennes, another fantastic drummer in the city, played percussion on bunch of tracks on this record. He sort of would be the second drummer. We would need a guitar player.
Yeah. You know,
and Carlos would be playing keyboards, and we actually realize that we have to do an instrumental version, a new instrumental version of Heroic Doses. Just for the old fans.
Sure. I mean, there is a bit of that. Like, are you, how much of the past do you want to bring into this? Because it is
just one track,
yeah.
Probably, well, because we don't have a singer, mm-hmm. This, you know, definitely it's about the new thing. But I think just for fun and a nod to the past, it'd be interesting to just pull out a version of Heroic Doses, but a 2023 version of it, as opposed to, you know, 1994 or whenever it was we recorded that.
You know, it's
you don't sound convinced.
I love it. It's when I heard this thing for the first time, I instantly, my brain, I'm like, in the round, surrounded by everybody. That, number one, just visually to watch what this thing could look like live would be incredible. Like, just to see it from overhead, because everyone needs to see you play. Everyone needs to see you play. And I just think, like, great, watching it on the stage, amazing, awesome. But that, to me, listening to this thing, I'm like, visually, in the round or something, like, where everyone's over top of you looking, would be an incredible immersive experience of what this record is. But
sounds,
it also
lends it, somebody that hasn't played in 15 years.
Understood. But, and then the other side of it, it is trippy enough that it could do, I think it could do like a different version without the full band per se, where it is more electronic based, and you can play some of these electronic festivals, because it's very, very trippy in that regard. And that's kind of a new thing. So I look at this thing as like
very interesting,
like a very interesting experience. It's like with the new record sounding the way it does sonically, like headphone wise, it's just like, it's unbelievable, because it's circles and circles and circles. And so that's what you're asking about the new listener or the new bands and the new things. Right. They're not, the Arkells are providing a visual experience, which is amazing. They've got the whole thing. It's a happy, it's incredible. It's a visual thing. This thing is sonically, but it needs to be seen as well, because there's so much going on this record. And so I'm like, I wonder if you can mix some of the old stuff in with this new style. For the old fan, sure, but more of a challenge. And you're saying mm-hmm. you want to do Heroic Doses, but you guys have some pretty cool stuff over your catalog that would probably move over to this really well too. So
It'd be really interesting to hear a lot of the tunes that with this just not necessarily stripped down. Well, they would be stripped down and built back up in a different way. That's actually a very intriguing idea.
Well, because it brings the, we're all older now. I mean, I could listen to the old records, but it's like,
sure.
you can say, all right, thank you for that part of the journey of the early band and everything that we did. And thank you. This is the new version. This is where we're going. There's no rules, but this is where we're going. But we're going to bring some of that old into this live thing. And then we're going to take you on this journey with us moving forward, which is going to be this new version of Gulag. But I just feel like it lends itself to that. It's great. It's such an experience on the senses. So,
you're definitely motivating me right now. Thinking, wait a minute, we can pull this off.
If you think of some of these great performances that have happened, and like there's the, I don't know if you're aware of the Hidden I Mother Earth show where they played 3 hours in Barry in the Round.
I think I did hear
it. It was incredible. I was there.
Was that like with both singers, right?
No, they didn't do both singers on that one. That was just with Brian. But I know that they just played with both singers on a bunch of shows, but I'm just saying like there's, it's just footage sitting there that's never come out that I was there for. That was incredible. And instantly when I heard this record, I was like, this would be great in that setting. In the round, everyone just like, what's going on over there now? Fuck, now what's going on over there? What's going on? You've definitely taken the listener to a great spot. And I would love to see if you pull it up.
Yeah, so. Cool. Actually, it reminds me, I have to call Christian Tanner because I was supposed to get together for a pint one of these days because he lives out where I live.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
He was there first, so we're gonna hang out and get him over and maybe.
I keep bugging his brother. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm waiting. Give me a song. Give me something.
Well, don't they have an album?
No, they haven't done anything.
Coming out with a new record.
Well, they might be.
I thought I heard that.
You might, who knows? But it's just me, the selfish listener, going, come on, let's go. I need some new stuff. So, but I know that there's, the debate of full album versus single tracks and what we just spoke about. But I really appreciate you putting out the 20 songs and taking me on a journey on that. So
it was a labor of love, certainly. Yeah, it was a lot of work.
Where can people find you online, my man? For all the stuff?
Well, the record's on all the streaming sites. Apple, Spotify, Tidal, Deezer, all of those. On YouTube. Apparently there's hundreds of these things. And, those are the ones I know.
What's your favorite track on the record?
Oh, that's a good question. Kind of changes. I really like everything we did, to be honest.
That's a fair answer.
All in different ways. I like Hugo and the Fish quite a bit because stylistically it's very, very different than anything we did in the past. It's sort of our take on jazz. We're not jazz players. I'm certainly not a jazz drummer, but I listen to a lot of it. And again, so it's not traditional jazz drumming, but it's sort of my version of it. And that one I'm pretty proud of. A Zero Day, I think, kind of blends that jazzy element, and that song also, the inspiration for that particular track was Ennio Morricone, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Johnny Marr, a bunch of, and if you listen, you can kind of hear these little things and that you know, it's got a lot of energy, but it's also got a lot of intricacies, if you will. Titled the first track, The Aegis, I think is a pretty slamming track too. But yeah, I kind of like them all.
I mean, I know that's a pretty stock question, but this is a unique creation that you've made. So it's sort of like, I like to get a take on it because it's like, well, this one took me 4 months to make that song, or it took us this and it took us that. So there, every now and again, there's labor, but you can see, I love this graphic here. You've got Zero Day, you've got Hugo and the Fish, you got it all on this. On
yeah.
The, on
yeah.
All that, the song titles there, which is great too. So.
Yeah. I did that as a, I just thought that would be just an interesting post for sort of a track listing.
Yeah.
And so I found this cinder block, painted it white, and just kind of started writing on it. And I put all the song titles on it and sent it to say, hey, let's just put this out on the socials. And it was like, that's the album cover. I'm like, okay. So that became the album cover. So that's that block sitting at my house. I think I have to give it to Carlos, so he really wants it.
Horror Vakai? Is that how you pronounce it?
Horror Vakui.
Horror Vakui is the record, the brand new Glue Leg, highly super influential band on my career, just strictly on the fact that Chris and the fellas gave me an opportunity to promote shows in Southern Ontario, this kid that was just starting out. And
you've done well.
Didn't know much, and you guys, I appreciate that and can't thank you enough for giving a shot to a kid like me to do it. And here we are circling back 20 years later, talking about a brand new Glue Leg record.
Thought it would happen.
Which happens to be probably one of the biggest creations of 20 songs for one of my favorite bands. And I congratulate you. And I thank you for making the time today to come on Do Did Will, the Story of People podcast for another week. Everyone pick up the record wherever you get all your things. Apple's
well,
right
there
here.
Will be a vinyl release. We're going to do some CDs as well, but there will be, it's in production.
Vinyl.
So double. Rad. Yeah. It's going to have lots of artwork and it's going to be great.
Awesome. That's Chris Simpson. That is the brand new Glue Leg record. And you guys, thanks so much for tuning in to Do Did Will, the Story of People podcast for another week. Be sure to check it out. I'm going to put all the links for the record, how to buy the album, how to listen to the record. I'm going to put clips up all week about some of this favorite stuff from the album. And some of the we'll put some video up of how they made it. There's some great stuff. Be sure to check it out. Christian, hopefully you come back, my man.
And, oh, well, yeah. We'll talk about this. Great. It's great chatting with you. It's been far too long. And really appreciate the support.
Great. Thanks, everybody. That's Do Did Will, the Story of People podcast for another week. We will see you again next week. Thanks, Christian.
See you. Bye.
Hey, listeners, I'm Christy.
And I'm Melissa, and this is Buried Motives, where we dig deep into the details of some of the most gruesome
dirtbag murderers. She said she enjoyed hurting things that can't fight back.
And that is a disturbing view into the mind of a murderer. And such a dirtbag.
Yeah, that's not even strong enough words. This is totally a recipe for disaster. And not to justify whatever is going to happen, but you can totally understand and see how this would be in the works.
If you were only to look at what she did later on and not know any of that history, she would appear like off the wall crazy.
Oh, 100%. Because we're not even close to getting to the end yet. But you can just see this pattern and all this kind of stuff developing in her, which is what we're here for. We're digging deep.
Join us each Thursday as we unearth the dirt bags that live among us
and the motives buried there. Hope you join us as we exhume the truth.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.